Welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. It's a bit of a sleepy week four here in Denver with the bye week, but there's still plenty to talk about, starting with recapping Sunday's game against the Seahawks. We'll also be taking a look at how the rest of the AFC West teams played in their week three matchups to get a glance at how the division is shaping up. And to finish, we've got columnist Andrew Mason joining us to review how the season has gone so far, though as little of it as we have seen. The Broncos have a couple rookies playing significant roles, so we've got progress reports on them, and we'll be discussing how the team is shaping up with all the new additions. I'm your host, Ben Swanson, and let's begin with an overview of the Broncos' overtime loss in Seattle. Unlike the first two games, the Broncos' offense didn't get off to a hot start against the Seahawks. Monte Ball turned the ball over on a fumble on the offense's first possession, which turned into a Seattle field goal. From there, Seattle's offense began to find traction, scoring two touchdowns before halftime. The turning point in the half had to be an offensive pass interference call on Ricardo Lockett as he prevented Aqib Talib from getting his hands on what looked to be a sure interception. Instead, Seattle was set back just 10 yards, and they would take it in stride, converting it into a first down and later a 39-yard touchdown to Lockett. After an uneventful third quarter, the fourth would see the Seahawks turned on their ear. Pinned near the goal line on a punt, Seattle would find themselves unable to push out of dangerous territory. DeMarcus Ware sacked Russell Wilson for a 7-yard loss, putting them back to the 1-yard line. And on the next play after a false start, Nate Irving and TJ Ward combined to tackle Marshawn Lynch in the backfield for a safety. A little later, the offense got a good start after a Chris Harris interception put them on Seattle's 19-yard line. A short while later, the Broncos found the end zone for the first time in the afternoon on a Manning shovel pass to Julius Thomas. The defense once again got the ball back into Manning's hands quickly, but a promising drive would be ended by a Cam Chancellor interception. Though the interception return gave Seattle great field position, all they got out of it was a field goal. With only an 8-point lead at 20-12, the Broncos could still tie the game if they drove for a touchdown and got a 2-point conversion. Which is a lot to ask for in a minute against one of the league's top defenses. Still, beggars can't be choosers, and with 59 seconds remaining on the clock, Manning made quick work, picking up 42 yards on a toss to Emmanuel Sanders. He got 12 more yards on a short pass to Demaryius Thomas, and then with only 24 seconds left, he found Jacob Tammy streaking down the left side for a 26-yard touchdown. Miraculously, they converted on a pass to DT, and after a kneel down by Wilson, the game headed to overtime. Unfortunately, the Broncos' offense would have no more chances, as the Seahawks scrambled their way up the field 80 yards, ultimately crossing the plane on a Marshawn Lynch 6-yard run, and that was that, with the game ending in sudden death. Though it's not the result you like, it was a close game with a lot of suspense, and there was definitely some things you can take away that are positives. Now, it's not a moral victory, as no one in the coaching staff or any of the players will say, because that's mostly an empty platitude. But you can look to the defense and what they did the second half as something good to take away. After giving up 206 yards in the first half, they cut that in half for the second half to 103. Mace, do you think that this kind of improvement that we saw just in one half is a little bit more indicative of what they can be going forward?
Well, certainly it shows what their ceiling is when things are going well, when they're getting pressure on the opposing quarterback, when every run lane is filled. I mean, it's not just the 103 yards in the second half. It's that it came on eight possessions. It's that the only two scoring chances that they had on those eight series, one was a drive that ended in a missed field goal, and the other was a field goal that was set up by a turnover that gave Seattle the ball in advantageous field position. And it's also the kind of explosive plays that you saw from the defense. You look at the sequence that led to the safety. You had DeMarcus Ware with a sack on second down. Really nice job of coverage in the secondary to give Ware a chance to get around his blocker and attack Russell Wilson from behind. And then on third down, four guys engulfing Marshawn Lynch in the end zone. And then right after that, on their next series, an interception that allows the offense to get advantageous field position to score. So it was a good half on all fronts, sullied a bit by what happened in overtime, to be certain. I mean, allowing an 80-yard drive, 13 plays, multiple third down conversions, that's going to leave a sour taste in your mouth. And certainly it showed some things that they need to work on, particularly in terms of containing elusive quarterbacks like Russell Wilson out of the pocket. But, it's hard to look at everything after halftime of the Seahawks game to say the defense did not make progress, particularly compared with what it did the last time it went against Seattle, obviously, with a lot different personnel back in the Super Bowl.
Switching gears here to the offense, one of the things that they had talked about improving was their rushing offense. And frankly, that was not much of a success. He had Monte Ball rushing 18 times for only 34 yards. How can this offense work towards improving that? Is it something where it looked like they might have been running the ball to set up the pass, but would it work to go the other way around?
That might help, but at the same time, if you're always passing to set up the run, then you're not leaving a lot of guesswork for the defense. They're going to play the pass more heavily. What you're trying to do is create a run-pass blend, and it's not a 50-50 thing. This is more, people say, oh, run-pass balance, it's 50-50. It's not. It's, in this day and age, it's more like 40-60, but it's got to be effective balance. It's got to be where both elements of the offense are as capable of controlling a game and controlling the tempo as each other. And that's going to start with the offensive line. It's going to start with getting a better push off the snap. 11 of the 19 carries by Broncos running backs and then by tight end Virgil Green saw the ball carrier met behind the line of scrimmage by a Seattle defender. And for the running backs this year, it's been 25 out of 63 attempts have seen a defender in the meeting them before they got to the line of scrimmage. That's a problem. I mean, just look at Monte Ball and his splits based on whether there was a defender meeting him behind the line of scrimmage or not against Seattle. When he got to the line of scrimmage unobstructed, he averaged 6 yards a carry. He got 42 yards. When there was someone there to meet him in the backfield, he lost 4 yards on 7 carries. That's, a massive difference in the first job for the Broncos and their offensive line in particular, which, of course, has the shuffling of Chris Clark to right tackle and Orlando Franklin to left guard this offseason. The first job is getting a push off the line of scrimmage and making sure that they can at least allow the running backs to get to the line of scrimmage and get some momentum, because what's happening now is it doesn't matter if it's Monte Ball, C.J. Anderson, or Ronnie Hillman. They don't have a shot because the defenders are on them too quickly.
Thank you, Mace. Now we'll head over and take a look at what the rest of the AFC West teams did this week. Now looking to the divisional standings, the Broncos are still atop the AFC West with their win over Kansas City in Week 2. However, the Chargers are close behind, also with a 2-1 record, and the Chiefs finally got into the win column while the Raiders continue to struggle. Our contributors David Deschant and Warren Giudice are back with us this week to tell us about how those games went. David, the Chargers went to Buffalo, who were previously undefeated, and they won 22-10. What happened in the game?
Yeah, it was an interesting test for the Chargers. Traveling across the country, we see a lot of teams struggle with that, playing in that Eastern time slot, especially coming from the West Coast, and it really didn't seem to bother the Chargers at all. They opened up a 20-3 lead just after halftime. And really, the defense just kind of took over from there. In the first half, we saw Phillip Rivers being very efficient, regular Phillip Rivers, hitting some big plays to Malcolm Floyd. He also found former Bronco Eddie Royal for the only 2 touchdowns of the game. And then in the second half, we just saw the defense, really close out the win. The offense in the fourth quarter punted 5 times, I believe, for the Chargers, but the defense didn't hesitate. They forced 2 punts of their own, forced 2 failed fourth down conversions, and they got a safety, which pretty much ended the game when they got E.J. Manuel in the end zone. He was called for intentional grounding. The safety put them up 22-10 for the final score. Ultimately, it was a decisive win for the Chargers, put them to 2-1 in the division, tied with the Broncos atop the AFC West.
Their defense looked pretty strong in that game. They came out with a safety. A little trivia here. One of the 3 safeties in AFC West games this week, though one was against the Chiefs. We'll talk about that later. But it looked like San Diego's defense stepped up after last week. It was their offense that really took control against the Seahawks. What did you think about their defensive play?
Yeah, the defense really kind of drove the victory home in this game. Their defense now on the season is tied for 4th in points allowed per game, 16.1. That's a huge difference from last year. Statistically, You know, they weren't near the bottom of the league last year, but that's because they didn't face very many plays. Their offense stayed on the field a lot and really kept the defense on the sideline. But on a per-play basis, their defense was one of the worst in the league. This year we're seeing them hold opponents to, you know, 16 points a game is pretty low, especially when you have Phillip Rivers at quarterback. So that's impressive. Other takeaways on the game is interesting. We saw Antonio Gates dominate last week with 3 touchdowns. Keenan Allen is kind of their top target. Neither of those guys had big games against Buffalo. Antonio Gates had 1 catch for 8 yards. Keenan Allen, 2 catches for 17 yards. This game we saw Eddie Royal catch 2 touchdowns. Malcolm Floyd had 2 long gains, I think 49 yards each. Ladarius Green, the tight end, backup tight end, had 4 catches for 64 yards. So really we saw the depth of the Chargers' offensive weapons, and even when their big guns weren't contributing, they really came through with the victory. Another important takeaway in this game, Danny Woodhead suffered a broken fibula down near his ankle, kind of an ugly play. They were already hurting for running back depth. We know Ryan Matthews is going to be out for another month maybe. With Danny Woodhead out, now they're really hurting at running back. Donald Brown had 31 carries in this game for only 62 yards. Not the way to get it done there, and they'll have to rely on him a lot more in the future with these two guys out. We'll see what happens there with the Chargers running game. They're now tied atop the division with the Broncos at 2-1. We'll see how that running game is clicking when they meet the Broncos in Week 8. That'll be Thursday night in Denver. The Broncos lost to the Chargers last time in Denver on a Thursday night, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. After the big win on the road, the Chargers are going to head back home, get one of the easier matchups in the league. They're playing the Jaguars. Jaguars are, I believe they've been outscored by 75 points now through 3 games. That's worst in the league by 25 points. But they will be starting Blake Bortles, rookie QB, for his first NFL start. He came into the game last week in the second half. Played okay here and there, threw a pick 6. But we'll see how he does in his first NFL start against what's looking like a pretty tough Chargers defense.
They've had a few injuries already, especially to the starting center, but they've done pretty well, and they've reeled off 2 back-to-back wins against pretty good teams, and their only loss was to Arizona, who has looked really solid as of late with a 3-0 record. Now let's look to Foxborough, where the Raiders took on the Patriots. Perhaps in a bit of a surprise, Oakland made this one pretty close all afternoon. If you like field goals, this was definitely the game for you, but still the Raiders dropped to 0-3 in a 16-9 loss. Lauren, what happened in this game?
Yeah, the Raiders definitely have a lot to be proud of. Though they're 0-3, I mean, it was an excellent effort. They really stifled Tom Brady in that Patriots offense, especially in the first half. They forced punts on the first 2 Patriot possessions, and they allowed just 23 total yards in the first quarter and 141 total yards in the first half. Specifically in the red zone, the Raiders forced the Patriots to kick field goals on 3 of their 4 red zone possessions, and the Patriots' lone touchdown was a Tom Brady 6-yard touchdown pass to Rob Gronkowski. And the Patriots scored 10 points in the last 4 minutes and 14 seconds of the second quarter to take a 10-3 lead. And the Raiders' offense just couldn't climb out of that. The Raiders' defense isn't necessarily known for a good rushing defense, but they actually held the Patriots to 76 yards on the ground in the game. And former Giant Justin Tuck was all over Tom Brady in the matchup and picked up 3 quarterback hits and a sack. And that sack really seemed to shake up Tom Brady. While the Oakland defense did their part in keeping the team in the game, the offense couldn't really get going, and Sebastian Janikowski's 3 field goals were the only points that the Raiders could get on the board. Derek Carr did pretty well in his 3rd NFL start with and completed 21 of 34 passes for 194 yards, but the Raiders are definitely missing Maurice Jones-Drew, who was sidelined for a 2nd straight week with a hand injury. Darren McFadden stepped in and started in his spot and rushed for 59 yards on 18 carries. And the Patriots really thwarted that rushing offense. And week 2, they held the Vikings to 54 yards on the ground. And the week 3, they only allowed the Raiders 67 yards on the ground. And the Raiders actually had a chance to tie it at the end, shockingly. And they got the ball back with just over 3 minutes left, down 16-9. And Carr looked like he was going to lead the Raiders downfield for his first NFL comeback, but he was picked off by Vince Wilfork with 51 seconds left, and the Patriots ran out the clock. Fun fact for everyone out there, every player who scored in the game, their last name ended with Kowski, with Janikowski, Gronkowski, and Gostkowski. The now 0-3 Raiders travel to London to face the Dolphins at Wembley Stadium on Sunday.
Thank you, Warren. And now let's hear how the Chiefs did as they tried to get their first win of the season. I'll go ahead and take this one. Yes, sir, the Chiefs finally got a win, and on the road, no less. Though they were still missing Jamaal Charles at running back, their backup Niall Davis rushed for 132 yards and a touchdown to pick up the slack on the ground. Their offense kept the chains moving to convert on 9 of 16 third downs, and their passing played a big part with 14 first downs through the air. Davis scored on a 21-yard run, and tight end Travis Kelce took home a 20-yard pass to the end zone to give the Chiefs a 14-3 lead at halftime. The Dolphins answered after the break on a short passing touchdown to draw within 4 points, but the Chiefs scored on another touchdown through the air to get back to an 11-point lead. The Dolphins would score to get the game closer, but a field goal and a safety on Alex Smith would be all they could muster after the touchdown earlier. And the Chiefs put the game away with 2 late touchdowns, pushing to the eventual score of 34-15. Though the offensive numbers won't wow you, the Chiefs put in some good work. Their early drives didn't muster much in the first quarter, and they shifted their plan a bit, looking more to the air to pick up yards on quick hits. From there, the rushing game picked up, and they really got things moving efficiently. Alex Smith completed 19 of his 25 attempts. And then on the other side of the ball, the defense played well for their part too, though it's tough with the injuries they've had. Miami converted only 27% of their third downs and failed on both fourth down attempts. Plus, quarterback Ryan Tannehill completed only 21 of his 43 passing attempts, which is impressive for Kansas City's defense, considering they're without linebacker Derek Johnson and Eric Berry, who has a high ankle sprain. Also, Dontari Poe had a great game with 1.5 sacks, a tackle for loss, 2 quarterback hits, and 1 pass defense. Now, the Chiefs return home to take on the Patriots in prime time on Monday Night Football. Thanks for joining us, David and Warren. Now we're going to go ahead and kind of review what we've seen from the Broncos from the beginning of the season. Andrew Mason is here with me to talk about just that. So without a game this week, we'll do a little reflection. First up, we have our rookie report cards. Bradley Roby, the third cornerback, a rookie out of Ohio State. He's made some pretty impactful plays so far. What do you like, and what do you want to see him improve upon?
I like his aggression. I like the fact that he's willing to get in there and make plays both against the run and against the pass. You see him always looking for the ball, always looking for the play and wanting to be involved with it. He's not simply a guy who says, okay, I'm focused on the guy I'm covering, and that's it. He's aware of what else is going on. When his role transitions from coverage to coming up and stopping the run, he flips that switch instantly, and he's very effective at it. So that goes back to just football instincts, and I guess you call it even street smarts, you know, just your quick thinking on the field. And he's very good at that. Where you want to see him improve is in coverage. You want to see him maybe react just a little bit quicker when the ball comes in his direction. Last week, he wasn't targeted as often by the Seahawks as he was, by the Colts in week one. But allowed receptions all 3 times he was targeted. Although he's done a very good job limiting the damage after the catch, which is something that he struggled a little bit with in week one, but has done much better in the last 2 games. So you're seeing progress. If you just want to maybe see him get there a little quicker and make some more plays on the ball, maybe be able to get an interception. That I think is the next step for him. But playing an extensive role already, I think he's doing very well. You certainly could not ask for more from a rookie cornerback at this stage in his career.
Although the Broncos don't have many rookies who have a big role in the team, Isaiah Burse is a wide receiver who mostly does his work on special teams, particularly punt returns. Do you have any thoughts on what you've been seeing out of him from, I mean, you can go back into the preseason. He did a little bit more wide receiver work then, but in the regular season, it's been mostly punting and special teams.
Some good, some that he needs to work on. I think the decision-making as to when to call for a fair catch, when not to, when to go ahead and return it. If you're going into cliche mode, you'd say when to hold them and when to fold them. That's something that he needs to work on. That's going to come with time. He talked to me this week about how that's part of that is adjusting to the speed of the NFL and knowing how fast the gunners are going to be on you, when you're a punt returner. So He knows he's got to work on that. I've liked some of what he's shown when he's actually had the chance to return. You've seen some missed tackles. You've seen some elusiveness. The other thing I think he probably needs to work on is just the way he catches punts. It's, you know, you want a guy who's going to catch it with his hands. Sometimes he uses his chest a little bit to field the ball, and that's going to get you in trouble at some point. So I think, you know, he needs to work a little bit more on catching the ball strictly with his hands. But, you know, again, through three games, you know, not too bad, and certainly, you know, he had a return against Seattle that I think, you know, showed the kind of moves and the kind of explosion he can make, and he may well have a breakaway return in him in the next few weeks.
With the bye week so early, you know, only three games under you, it's kind of hard to make a lot of conclusive reflections at this point, like we're trying to do. But one of the other things that you're looking at here is how well are these new additions from the offseason meshing in with the system. And you've got DeMarcus Ware, T.J. Ward, Aqib Talib, you know, three completely new players to the team. How well are they fitting in on this defense?
I think pretty well. I would certainly say with T.J. Ward, I thought he had his best game against Seattle. There was a lot on his plate. You know, he obviously has his usual role coming up and stopping the run, but he also had a blitz of Russell Wilson that resulted in a sack, and he also had a role in defusing Percy Harvin. You know, when, you know, obviously Chris Harris was handling Harvin on one side and kind of shadowing him, but then when Harvin would cross behind the offensive line, T.J. Ward was responsible for watching him on the other side. So, you know, an awful lot for T.J. Ward to do, but I thought he did very well. DeMarcus Ware, I mean, he's exactly what you thought he was going to be. You know, just, he still has that, that quickness, that elite quick twitch, that speed on the outside as a pass rusher. We saw it on the sack of Russell Wilson against Seattle, how he can get outside and get guided behind the quarterback. But if you've got good coverage downfield, he has that quickness to change direction and then attack and accelerate from behind. There's not a lot the quarterback can do in that situation. And DeMarcus Ware has feasted over the years on that. So that has been good to see. And Aqib Talib, I mean, a great play to set up the interception in the fourth quarter when he basically suckered Russell Wilson into throwing into his area, managed to get a hand on it and allowed Chris Harris to pick it off. To me, all three of those guys have been exactly as advertised, and I think we're only going to see better from them in the coming weeks as the defense gets more cohesion.
You talked a bit about Chris Harris there. Him, Von Miller, Derek Wolfe, a lot of players on this defense are coming back from injury. We'll start off with Chris Harris here. How well has he looked coming back from his ACL? He said it himself. You'll be amazed. Are you amazed?
Takes a lot to amaze me, especially with Chris Harris, because I have such a high expectation for him, having watched him develop the last 4 years. But, just his quickness is there. You know, the fact that he was entrusted with shadowing Percy Harvin and working back in the slot against Seattle tells you, you know, how far he's come and how close he is to being all the way back. Just, I mean, tremendous. Every team wishes they had a guy like Chris Harris in their secondary. So, you know, he's very quickly overcome that injury and is once again a strength of the defense. And then, of course, you know, some of the other guys, you know, Von Miller had easily his best game against Seattle, all over the place. We talked about what he did in the pass rush, but also did well against the run, did well, you know, pursuing Russell Wilson when it was outside the pocket. Just an exceptional game for Von Miller, the kind of game that you expected from him in 2012, and I think going to see again in the future. I think Raheem Moore's getting better. You know, we saw the two interceptions back in week one, but I think he's able to cover more ground now. I think his confidence is back. He looks like he did before the compartment syndrome that he had last year. Derek Wolfe, I mean, actually, I answered a question about him on my mailbag this week, which you can watch on DenverBroncos.com. It's kind of hit and miss at this point. I like what he's done against the run. I like the fact that he's generated some pressure, some hurries on opposing quarterbacks. What I want to see from him now is him finishing the job. You want those hurries and those pressures to result in sacks and actual hits on the quarterback, taking that last step. That's the next step for Derek Wolfe that I think he needs to take.
So much focus is on the defense, all the additions, all the returns that, I mean, I don't want to say there's a lot of people losing sight of this offense that put up so many records last year, but people aren't really looking to it the same way they look to defense to improve after last season. Because after history, how much can you really improve upon? Still, there were some people who left and some people who came in. Now you have Emmanuel Sanders at wide receiver, and he's in back-to-back games, he's put up two career performances, 200-yard games. He's never had 100-yard games in the NFL before, and all of a sudden he's just shot out of the gates. What have you seen out of him?
Like he said in the offseason, you know, coming to Denver was wide receiver heaven, and it's proven to be that way for him. You know, it's interesting to look at how he was used on Sunday, because when the Broncos, you know, were just kind of running their initial game plan, it was a lot of the short stuff, which he can do. But as they fell behind, they needed to go vertical more. They were getting him open downfield, and he was able to make some plays, and he was a frequent target. That just shows you why they brought him here, that he's a guy that has the experience to do the underneath stuff, because he was the slot man in Pittsburgh, but he has the speed to make plays downfield, and that's an element that this offense really hasn't had. And you know, we saw them test the Colts and Chiefs with Sanders getting downfield. We look back at the Chiefs game on the first play at the 48-yard post route, and then we saw what Sanders did when he was able to get open deep against the Seahawks toward the end of that game. And I wonder, you know, after that, if they aren't going to mimic what they did against Kansas City and try to set up plays for him to stretch the defense early and open things up underneath for their other targets. There's plenty of options with him, but right now, you know, the only thing that's missing from Emmanuel Sanders right now, touchdown. He hasn't scored one yet, but that's going to come with time as he keeps getting targeted. I mean, he looks like he's about to have his breakout year. Pretty exciting to watch him.
No game this week, so we don't have anything to prepare for, really. But bye week for the players. Mace, is it also a bye week for the reporters?
Kind of. You can still log on to DenverBroncos.com. I'll have my mailbag on Friday. I'm going to have a breakdown of the rookies that's going to be on the site. It slows down a little bit because there's not a game, but there's stuff to do. There's still things to talk about, and I'm sure I'll be on Twitter, and I'll even be watching some college football this weekend as well. I'm actually going to be watching South Florida and Wisconsin up in Madison on Saturday, so get a good look at some guys. And you know, everyone's been talking about Melvin Gordon. I'm excited to see him in person, see what he can do. So the football reporter's brain really doesn't switch off at this time of year, even during a bye.
Well, thank you, Mason. Thanks for being on the podcast again this week. And to everyone else, thanks for tuning in. We will talk to you all next week. Everyone enjoy the bye.